You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. A U.S. Senate committee has opened an investigation into the announced merger of the PGA Tour and its competitor, LIV Golf. Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut opened the inquiry, raising concerns about LIV Golf being owned and operated by the public investment fund managed by the Saudi Arabian government. He and other critics of the merger cite Saudi Arabia's involvement in 9/11 and the assassination of Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi, along with human rights issues. When the two golf leagues were competitors, PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan joined in the rebuke of the Saudi involvement in LIV Golf. But now he says the merger will help grow the sport and better compensate the players with new money invested.
I recognize that people are going to call me a hypocrite. And anytime I've said anything, I said it with the information I had at that moment. And I said it based on someone that's trying to compete for the PGA Tour and our players. And so I accept those criticisms, but circumstances do change. And I think that, you know, in looking at the big picture and looking at it this way, that's what got us to this point.
Monahan sent a letter to Congress last week telling lawmakers they didn't do enough to support the PGA Tour in fending off LIV Golf from taking over the sport. The controversy surrounding the merger, which has not yet been finalized, is leading to broader conversations about the geopolitics surrounding sports and some of the legal issues, too. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about this planned merger between the PGA Golf Tour and LIV Golf? If you're a fan of professional golf, how do you think it could affect the sport? If you're not a golf fan, how do you feel about Saudi Arabia's increasing involvement in a major U.S. sport? Do you think Congress or federal antitrust regulators should try and stop this deal? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Matthew Mitten is a professor of law and executive director of the National Sports Law Institute at Marquette University. Matt, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. Pleasure to join you.
Well, this was a big twist, Matt. These were... competitors to the death, it looked like, for a moment, legal disputes, antitrust actions, international accusations flying here. Now they're best of friends at a merger. Were you surprised at how quickly this turned around?
Yeah, very much so. It's, you know, relatively rare and might be unprecedented where two parties and, you know, fight to the death, antitrust litigation, agree to a merger and resolving it. I can't really think of anything similar in recent years off the top of my head.
Let's talk about the antitrust part of this. This is one of the big legal issues. Now, LIV Golf, the Saudi Arabian-backed golf outfit, was going to challenge PGA for retaliating against golfers who left that tour, went over to LIV Golf, in part under antitrust law. Okay, well, now they're merged together, and some people are saying, hey, wait a minute, isn't this an antitrust issue too? What do you think?
Yeah, I think in many ways, you know, the merger, although the parties aren't characterizing as this, they're clearly joining forces. And as I understand it, the Saudi Arabian Public Investment Fund is going to put, you know, $2 to $3 billion in the pot. The chairperson who oversees that is going to be the CEO of the combined company. But yet the PGA Tour Commissioner, Jay Monahan, is going to have, you know, supposedly effective control there. So I think in many ways, you know, the settlement, the merger, whatever you want to call it, likely presents more significant antitrust issues than the litigation that initially the LIV players brought against the PGA for not permitting players to effectively play in, you know, the PGA Tour if they were, you know, signed a contract with LIV, and then that was subsequently the players kind of dropped out of that as plaintiffs, and then LIV was the plaintiff bringing that. So, you know, definitely antitrust issues, both sides, but I think there could be more significant ones based upon this settlement.
Now, yeah, settlement, probably a better word than merger, I guess, but it also speaks to the weird structure. You've got the PGA, which is a nonprofit, but I guess a pretty profitable one. And then you've got the major tournaments that affiliate only with the PGA. And now you've got LIV Golf. Can you talk about the structure and just the legal maybe weirdness of it here?
Yeah, it's, I guess it's not been finalized, but essentially the world's major, you know, men's golf tours are now under the same umbrella and common ownership and control. So the PGA Tour, LIV Golf, and then also the European Tour. So that's the type of thing where, you know, does raise some pretty significant antitrust issues that the antitrust division of the Department of Justice is going to, you know, take a look at. You know, we had three separate tours, and now they've been combined into an entity in which there is going to be common control. And it, from what I've read, it's the PGA Tour Commissioner who is going to, you know, be making the decisions as to, for example, does the LIV Tour continue to exist after the current season?
People may scratch their heads when they hear that the PGA itself is a nonprofit organization, which, of course, affects their tax status. Is that typical for a major sports league like that?
Yeah, that's not really uncommon for, you know, quite a while the National Football League was structured as, you know, a nonprofit entity, which only would mean that the legal the legal entity, I'm not a tax person, is not paying the taxes, but someone else is. It would be, you know, the clubs, for example, the NFL clubs. The players clearly are going to be paying income tax on their prize winnings, but it, you know, tax issues are, you know, one of the most significant factors that determine how a professional sports league or, you know, association, for example, the National Collegiate Athletic Association, is, you know, the legal entity itself. The NCAA is structured as a nonprofit. So that isn't all that uncommon.
Talking to Matthew Mitten, professor of law and executive director of the National Sports Law Institute at Marquette University, looking at this big merger in the golf world, the PGA Tour, and this newer LIV or LIV Golf League funded by Saudi Arabian money. You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your questions, thoughts, reactions to the settlement, the combo there, 800-642-1234. Matt, here comes the Senate now, an inquiry here based largely on, I think, on the role of Saudi Arabia in this LIV Golf tour. What are your thoughts on, you know, congressional committee, a congressional inquiry into this proposed deal?
Well, that's not at all surprising to me, because this is the committee that's chaired by Senator Blumenthal, and it looks very closely at, you know, foreign investment in various industries within the United States. Of course, when, as you can imagine, if you get a foreign entity or funds, and typically whoever is providing the funding has control over certain, you know, industries, ones that could be, you know, critical to, let's say, U.S., you know, defense. So they'd be looking very closely if someone's going to, you know, acquire controlling interest in Boeing or any, you know, military equipment suppliers. What's interesting about this is golf, of course, is a net part of the entertainment industry. And apparently this committee not only has jurisdiction to look at, well, what are going to be the effects on U.S. interests, but, you know, which they'll look at and they'll say, well, I've seen there's some concern that since there are PGA Tour events held on golf courses close to U.S. military installations. So that is a concern. And then also the broader issue of, you know, Saudi Arabia's rather abhorrent, you know, human rights abuses over the years.
Do you think it's likely that Congress will find grounds to enact laws to block or limit this new combination of these golf leagues, or that antitrust regulators would find cause to stop this deal from happening?
I think it's more likely that if this deal doesn't go through, or if there's some significant modifications required, it's going to be as a result of antitrust scrutiny by the Department of Justice rather than any congressional action. I think there'll be some hearings, but, you know, when it comes to Congress, it's, you know, the mantra after all is said and done, there's always a lot more said than done. I think that is going to be the likely result. I don't think we'll see any specialized legislation. You know, there'll be some, you know, the PGA Tour and officials, Commissioner Monahan, there'll be hearings, his feet will be held to the fire, a whole host of things. But because this is, you know, an entertainment industry rather than something that involves self-defense or another essential industry, I think less likely that it'll be resolved by legislation, perhaps more likely by some threatened, you know, action taken by the antitrust division, or even maybe a lawsuit that could result.
We're talking to Marquette University sports law professor Matt Mitten about the PGA Tour, the big name in the golf world, merging with LIV Golf, which is a upstart challenger at first, and the controversy surrounding the partnership with the Saudi Arabian-funded sports enterprise. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Any pro golf fans out there, are you following this story? What do you think about this apparent resolution to the conflict? Do you have questions about the laws surrounding all of this, or opinions surrounding Saudi Arabian involvement in a big American sports outfit? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You could also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Matt Mitten, professor of law and executive director of the National Sports Law Institute at Marquette University, with us today to talk about the Saudi-backed LIV Golf merging with the PGA Tour, some of the ethical, the legal questions that surround it all. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you feel about Saudi Arabia's involvement with professional golf in the U.S.? What questions do you have about this deal? How would you like to see this all play out? Call in at 800-642-1234. If you're a golf fan, love to hear what you think of all of this. 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller. Mike is with us in Wauwatosa. Mike, hi.
Hello.
What did you want to bring up, Mike?
I believe that Saudi Arabia, with their human rights issues, shouldn't be influencing or any other country in professional sports in the United States. They're just throwing a bunch of money in there, and I think the guy head of the PGA just took, obviously they gave him money and just took the money and ran.
Mike,
he did.
Mike, thanks a lot for the call. Matt, Mike saying doesn't like seeing that Saudi Arabian involvement, thinks the PGA head took the money and ran. What do you think?
Well, I think that's true. They made a business decision. You know, apparently it was costing, you know, millions of dollars to defend this case. They might have lost it. And when the opportunity arose for, you know, very substantial funding, then it shifted to, well, hey, this is in the business interests of the PGA Tour and its players. Kind of the idea, if you can't beat them, we'll join them. And the whole idea of, well, we just, you know, don't want to get into bed, so to speak, with a, you know, sovereign entity this fund that really has this despicable record of human rights abuses. It looks to be just purely an economic decision that Commissioner Monahan and some others felt was in the best interests of the PGA Tour.
Mike, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Matt, when this was all going down, before this deal was announced, you had some PGA players going to this LIV Golf Tour for big money, the PGA trying to stop them, threatening, you know, hey, you can't play at our gigs anymore. Well, now you've got this deal, and some players who stuck with the PGA, maybe turned down big paydays, might be scratching their heads. Could they potentially have legal recourse if the PGA doesn't sweeten the deal for them?
You know, I don't think so, because, you know, presumably these same, you know, the players who chose to stay on the PGA Tour had a choice. And, you know, they probably realized that they could have made a lot more money just in what are essentially appearance fees to play on the LIV Tour. But from what I've read is, the players who stayed with the PGA Tour, they end up coming out of this okay, because there's apparently some consideration being given to them getting equity shares in this new entity, one, and that may well be substantial, because after all, if the PIF is putting, you know, $2 to $3 billion into the pot, that's a lot of money. And then the other thing is that the players who went to the LIV Tour, they'll all need to individually apply for reinstatement to the tour. And there may well be some financial penalties as, you know, a condition of reinstatement. So this could end up, you know, the PGA players who stayed, you know, might be close to the same position, or at least not any worse off than those who left for the LIV Tour.
Talking to Matt Mitten, professor of law, executive director of the National Sports Law Institute at Marquette University, looking at this big dramatic story in the world of pro golf, a big money story with the PGA, the longstanding tour, effectively combining operations with LIV Golf, a challenger funded by Saudi Arabian-backed money. Still time for you to join in if you have a reaction or questions at 800-642-1234. Matt, we've seen controversies in other leagues in the past when it comes to, say, the NBA keeping players from criticizing politics in China, for example, worried about offending a very large potential market for a sport. Do you see a difference between a story like that and a story like this, where it's not just, you know, worrying about a Saudi Arabian market, but being heavily funded by, in effect, an operation of the Saudi Arabian government?
Well, I think it all falls under the thing is that, you know, every professional sports league and organization is first and foremost an economic entity. And they do tend to look out for their economic interests. It's really the same thing here. It's, you know, kind of shades of the same color, so to speak. And, you know, there's always been an uneasy mix between sports and politics. There's never been a clear separation. We don't really have it in other industries also. There is, you know, Saudi investment in a whole range of companies. It just doesn't get as much attention like sports does.
This is an agreed deal. There's a lot of things to be worked out, some potential challenges. What are some of the big questions you have, Matt, as these two, I guess three entities, counting the European Tour, hash out exactly how this thing is going to work?
Well, one we, you know, I mentioned already is, you know, one of the things motivating this is that at least the PGA Tour wants to have, with its tournaments, the best players in the world, you know, participating on those. So they're going to have to, you know, work out what's going to be the process, what's going to be the economic penalty, other discipline for what, you know, Commissioner Monahan has said is disloyalty. You know, you agreed to play just for us, and now you're leaving. That will be an issue. I think the, you know, the government entity conducting the antitrust review, the antitrust division of the Department of Justice, is going to want to know, well, are there going to be, are these three tours going to continue to exist, even if they're under common control? I mean, you know, there's going to be some serious antitrust concerns if this is just, well, okay, Saudi Arabia is putting a bunch of money into that's going to benefit the PGA Tour. I think the European Tour is going to continue to exist. But what about the LIV Tour? Is that going to go away? Because particularly, is that a decision that Jay Monahan has the sole authority to make? And it might have been a thing, you know, where the marketplace decided, well, we prefer the PGA Tour over the LIV Tour, and we want to see all of the best players compete more in the format that, you know, the PGA Tour has traditionally done, where it's, you know, there's a cut made after the first 36 holes. It's why we typically have one major professional league for each team sport in the U.S. You know, what sorts of innovation might come about this? I guess there are some features of the PGA Tour that, you know, team golf, those sorts of things.
And we'll leave it there. Thanks to our guest, Matthew Mitten, Professor of Law, Executive Director of the National Sports Law Institute at Marquette University, looking at the planned combination of LIV Golf and the PGA Tour, what it means beyond the world of sports. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, Wisconsin's alcohol laws could change under a bill in the state legislature. We'll find out what's going on. That and more tomorrow on Central Time. Coming up after the news, we'll get a preview of music festivals in Wisconsin this summer, plus advice for first-time festival goers with a Wisconsin music writer. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, a legal expert breaks down the federal indictments against former President Trump after his first court appearance today in Miami. First, summer is music festival season in Wisconsin, and there's a lot to see and hear. But it can be overwhelming finding the right festival for you and knowing how to prepare for a day of music in the outdoors. Good news, our next guest has lots of advice for festival first-timers and longtime fans. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. What Wisconsin festivals are you looking forward to this summer? What advice do you have for first-time festival goers? What questions do you have if you want to check out a festival but don't know where to start? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Piet Levy is a music reporter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Piet, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Now, is Wisconsin back in the festival groove after COVID disruptions over the years?
Yeah, it's definitely the most normal it's been in many years. I mean, as you recall, everything was canceled in 2020. 2021, a few things came back. Summerfest that year, which is the biggest festival in the state, came back in September of that year. And by then, cases were up and there were a lot of protocols at the gates. Those protocols would drop for 2022, but still last year you had some festivals that didn't quite get back up to speed. I think this year it's definitely full throttle to the point that we're seeing maybe some new events we don't typically see, like the Harley-Davidson Homecoming Festival, which is the first big Harley music festival in Milwaukee in a decade, but that's happening this summer.
And before we check out more of the music and the festivals themselves, can you give us some basics, Piet, for people who think, okay, I want to check out a music festival, but I don't know, I've never been to one of these before. Some preparation, what kind of things do they want to do before they head out to the festival that day?
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, I think one thing I've noticed in a lot of concert reviews coming out of the pandemic is that there's been more issues of fans kind of, I think, getting overwhelmed or getting dehydrated, feeling a little sick or fainting, things like that. I've seen that definitely at more shows, and that can definitely happen at festivals. Artists too are kind of more cognizant of that, and I think fans in general are more cognizant in trying to alert artists or alert security when there's an issue. But I do think that what we're seeing is people are kind of coming back, they're super excited, or maybe they haven't done these kinds of things in a while or ever at all, and they're kind of pushing their body past the limit but not really understanding that. So I think it's really important that especially at a festival on a really hot day, for instance, stay hydrated. You know, just try to take some good rests, try to get some shade when you can, but definitely push the water and make sure that you can, you know, you stay healthy and stay safe out there. I mean, that's kind of like the main absolute rule, I would say. And beyond that, I mean, there's, you know, I think you should be prepared for parking and be prepared for transportation issues. I know that it's definitely been a challenge, you know, getting to festivals with, just again, coming back from things, it just seems like sometimes the driving can just be a lot longer to get a parking spot. So I think you just need to be planning accordingly, give yourself plenty of extra time to get to a festival, to get through security, and just take good care of yourself. Don't push yourself too hard. Don't push it too late in terms of getting out the door.
This is Wisconsin summer, so weather is always predictably unpredictable. How about being prepared for all the elements that Wisconsin summer has to offer?
Yeah, I mean, I think if it's you know, check the weather. If it's going to be hot, definitely stay hydrated, stay cool, you know, find ways to, you know, get a mister or something like that, or take some breaks kind of in the shade. If it's raining, just kind of plan accordingly with a poncho, or, you know, make sure you know, maybe you see a show. If it's a covered stage, I know there's some of those at Summerfest, you kind of plan to see stuff there if need be. I think in terms of shoes, especially if you're like really walking around. I mean, I learned this the hard way covering a festival, you know, in the early years, where I wore sandals for a very intensive walking, you know, festival that took a lot of walking. And by the end of the night, my feet were just totally just screaming at me. So I think just make sure you have like really appropriate sturdy footwear. I think sneakers are probably gonna be best for you, honestly. Just a lot of good foot support with that. And yeah, I think just stay hydrated, stay cool. There's been times in the beginning, especially when I was starting out, kind of where I just wore, you know, jeans, but it was just a really hot day and it was just like killing me, or yeah, not having the right kind of shoes. Or definitely, I know there's been a couple festivals where I just did not drink enough water, did not get enough shade. I did not apply sunblock every 90 minutes. And then it just felt so much worse by the end of the day or the next day. So just make sure you take care of yourself. It's exciting, obviously, but take care of yourself.
We're getting some musical and practical advice for Wisconsin's summer music festival season. Piet Levy is with us, music reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. You could join in at 800-642-1234. If you have a favorite music festival in the state, what do you like about it? Do you have some advice to share for first timers? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Dan is with us in the Dells. Dan, hi.
Hi there. Yes, I'd like to talk about the Wajawa End of Summer Festival. That's the second weekend after Labor Day. Every year, same weekend. They have Maxwell Street Days. They have a craft mall. They've got every local social club, the Elks, the Lions, the Polish, at every intersection, cooking authentic food. There's bands at night. The swing crew plays at the showboat. And then on Sunday has one of the best parades, about two and a half hours long. It has every local band in it. It has the dancing grannies in it from Waukesha. It is truly one of the best festivals in Wisconsin.
Dan, thanks a lot for the recommendation. That's Wozawa, W-O-Z-H-A-Wa Days Fall Festival. Thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Piet, we're looking at a lot of the higher profile events today, but people can find some music and all the other fixins at a lot of local events too around the state.
Oh, there's way too many to cover. I mean, it's insane how much there is. But that's what makes Wisconsin so special in the summer. I mean, obviously, winters can be pretty treacherous and unpleasant at times. But in the summer, I mean, that's really when the state truly shines. And you've got, yeah, huge festivals, but you've also got, with the big names, then you've got a lot of really wonderful, fun, charming, probably less stressful, less costly, you know, street festivals or festivals in smaller towns. And festivals that also stretch, you know, they're not just in the dog days of summer and August, but you do have festivals like we just mentioned out in through September, sometimes October. So, I mean, there's just a ton of great options. So there's so much to look for. It just kind of depends on what you want to do, when you're available, and where you want to be.
Let's start naming some more names now. You wrote a piece, Piet, on some of the festivals you look forward to. One of them is Appleton's A Mile of Music. This is a unique thing here in Wisconsin. Tell us a little bit about that for people who haven't been there.
Yeah, the Mile of Music is really unlike any other festival in the state and unlike many others in the country. It's celebrating its 10th year this year. And the way this works is that there's a mile-long stretch of basically businesses in downtown Appleton that host music. This year, it's going to be happening from August 3rd to the 6th. It's always kind of in early August. And these venues host, at least this year, it's going to be more than 200 artists. I think it was smaller before, but it keeps growing and growing and or staying about steady. So it's about 200 artists this year. It's going to be about 40 venues along this mile-long stretch of Appleton. And for the most part, all the shows are free. You don't have to pay anything. It's really just kind of a first come, first serve sort of thing. I mean, you could be a subscriber to the Mile of Music Music Makers program, and that includes some perks like some priority access for certain shows, and there's some exclusive shows you can see. But you don't have to pay anything to see a ton of really great musicians. And there's a lot of great stuff from around the world. I mean, this year they've got a band called the Heavy Heavy from England. They've got White Horse is a really good folk band from Canada. But they also got a lot of great Wisconsin acts. I know Sleepy Gaucho is playing there from Milwaukee. Ben Molana, who is in the Milwaukee area, just released a really wonderful soul folk album. Really great. It's one of my favorite local releases of the year. He's going to be playing at Mile of Music. And I think they've only announced 50 artists so far. At least that was the case when I wrote my story for JSOnline.com. But there's going to be, again, more than 200. So keep an eye out for more names, and it's artists from around the world and tons of artists, great artists right here in Wisconsin.
Now, you mentioned earlier one of your picks for rock this year is this Harley-Davidson Homecoming Festival. Here's a taste of one of the handful of big names on the agenda that festival. So Green Day, plus you got what, Foo Fighters, Joan Jett, the list goes on. Social Distortion was on, but I think they had to cancel out of that one. Big festival, though, Piet.
Yeah, I mean, this is something that has been happening in Milwaukee. It happens every, 5 years, generally. In the past, you may recall kind of the infamous Elton John surprise appearance that was pretty polarizing. But then 5 years later, Harley made good and got Bruce Springsteen to play in 2008. That was at Veterans Park. That was the last time that Harley had a big festival in Veterans Park around its kind of Harley-Davidson celebration. And they do it every kind of 5 years to celebrate the anniversary of the company. This year, it's the 120th anniversary. So Veterans Park, 2008, that was the last time they did a big festival there. Flash forward to 2013, they did a festival. It was at the Summerfest grounds. The big acts that year included Toby Keith, they had Kid Rock, they had Aerosmith. And then in 5 years later after that, so that would have been, I'm doing the math terribly, but 5 years ago, they didn't have a big music festival. They had a lot of events, but not really very music focused. This year, it's back to major music. And this year, it's back to Veterans Park, again, for the first time since 2008. And you've got Green Day. Green Day played their first Milwaukee show in almost two decades at Summerfest in 2021. They're going to be playing one night. Foo Fighters as well. A beloved band. They were the band that played the first huge concert in Milwaukee after the pandemic shut down live music in March 2020. They're coming back. And then among the other acts that you kind of mentioned, I want to give a shout out to some Wisconsin artists. There's Kenny Hoopla, who's a Wisconsin-raised rocker. He's got a lot of buzz behind him. He's playing as well as Abby Jean, who's kind of a soul rocker from Milwaukee. I think she's based in New York right now, but she's going to be coming back for this festival too. So it's really great to see this.
Talking to music reporter Piet Levy from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about music festivals in Wisconsin this summer and practical lessons he's learned as a frequent festival goer himself. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is there a lesson you've learned for maybe the hard way for preparing for music festivals? Do you have a favorite festival you're looking forward to here in Wisconsin? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time.
Go on and put on that dress, hit all the bad boys like. I know your daddy ain't home, so ride with me tonight. You always wind up here.
That's Zach Bryan performing this year at Summerfest. You're listening to Central Time. Piet Levy stays with us, music reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, getting a preview of summer music festivals and some practical advice for first-time festival goers. You can join in with your anticipation for a festival this year, a favorite memory, or a question for our guest at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or maybe some practical advice of your own to share. Let's bring another caller on, I think, about Summerfest. Peter is with us in Sturgeon Bay. Peter, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to bring up, Peter?
Yeah, well, first of all, Summerfest is one of the greatest things that the world has ever known. But I wish they, I don't know if there's any word about whether they might go back to their old format of having some of the days during the week instead of just several consecutive weekends.
Oh, gotcha. Peter, Piet, changes to Summerfest there that Peter's concerned with.
Yeah, no, thanks for calling in, Peter. And that's been the case for a couple of years, and it's definitely been a divisive change to the Summerfest agenda. I mean, they basically introduced that in 2021, and they had it again in 2022. And last year, they basically said, this is the way it's going to stick for, you know, the indefinite future, where instead of being the 11 days, for a while, it was 11 days with kind of a Monday off straight. It changed to three-day weekends. So it's Thursdays through Saturdays across three weekends. This year, it's June 22nd to 24th, then June 29th to July 1st, and then July 6th to 8th. It's been very divisive, and there's people who really like the old format where they can kind of go any sort of day. I know there's people in the service industry who I think don't really like this either because it cuts down on potential business on weekdays when Summerfest would be hopping. But Summerfest is stuck by this, and unfortunately, they're not going to be changing this. I mean, their argument is that they can work with three different weekends instead of two weekends, essentially, for booking, so it helps on the booking end of things. They've also tried to justify by beefing up the daytime bookings. You know, in the past, there'd be a handful of, like, national names performing on day stages maybe every day, or, you know, maybe one day with several of them. Now that the format has changed where it's, you know, every day at the festival, there's multiple kind of, you know, whether it's, you know, veteran acts, nostalgia acts, or, you know, kind of up and coming artists that are getting some buzz playing, you know, in the afternoon slots. So just trying to make the lineup more stacked every day. So yeah, there's a lot of people who don't like the way that it is, but I'm afraid to tell those people, I think it's going to be this way for a while.
Thanks for the call, Peter. Before we move on from Summerfest, Piet, any other highlights? We heard Zach Bryan there. What are some of the other shows you're looking forward to?
Yeah, Zach Bryan, I think, will be really great. If there's one that's going to be kind of the one that'll be remembered this year, I think that might be the one because he's an artist that has just got so much momentum behind him. And that show at the American Family Insurance Amphitheater on July 7th basically sold out almost instantly. American Heartbreak, his triple album last year, has been a big sensation. And he played Summerfest last year at the Miller Lite Oasis. He's kind of unknown when he was booked for that, but he had a huge crowd. And he's clearly big enough for the amphitheater and probably be playing stadiums in the near future. That's definitely a highlight. Another highlight, I think, for me personally, will be the next night. You've got Smokey Robinson, who's 82 or 83, living legend. He's playing at the U-Line Warehouse. I saw Smokey Robinson at the Miller High Life Theater in Milwaukee last year, and I was just stunned by how great that show was, how energetic he was, how amazing his voice sounded. It was just a stunning, like, honestly privilege and honor to see him perform. And I'm really floored that he's playing at Summerfest on one of the quote free stages, on the ground stages. So anyone with a general admission ticket can see this legend. And I think you really owe it to yourself to see him. He's still so good in concert. That's definitely a highlight. Another highlight too I want to shout out is there's a Mexican rapper named Santa Fe Clan who's going to be performing on June 24th at the Miller Lite Oasis. I think that's really noteworthy too because, you know, Summerfest in the years past, they've had kind of hit and miss years with hip hop. Sometimes they're really got some great cutting edge artists. Sometimes it's artists kind of past their prime or it's a little bit boring. And then in terms of Latin music, you know, even though Latin music has been really surging in popularity across the last decade or so, you know, the Latin bookings at Summerfest have been kind of behind the times and behind that curve, pretty far back behind that curve. So to see them book Santa Fe Clan, who is a fast rising Mexican rapper who embraces sounds of cumbia into his sound. He's done something really novel with that. And he's doing his first arena tour. But he's also doing a ground stage. So with just a general admission ticket, you can see this artist who's playing arenas around the country at Summerfest. And it's great to see Summerfest book a Latin artist who's on a fast ascent. That's really cool to see that kind of, you know, that novel cutting edge booking.
We're on another caller now. Stan is with us in De Pere. Stan, hi.
Yeah, hey. The first concert of the summer festival of the series every year is Celebrate De Pere, which just got over. It's every Memorial weekend, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Memorial weekend. It's the biggest veterans celebration in the state. But we just had it, and there was 30,000 people there over 3 days. On Sunday, they had 18,000 people there to see the glam band, to see the former lead singer of the Bodines. And it's live music on two stages from 11:30 in the morning to 11:30 at night, both days, and then Monday as well. And it's only $5 for the whole day to see music on two stages. So if your guest hasn't been there, I strongly recommend it. Occasionally they have big headliners, you know, like the Starship or Night Ranger and people like that. It's a lot of 80s and 90s and a lot of country music as well.
Stan, thanks a lot for the call. Get that on our calendar for next Memorial Day. Talking to Piet Levy from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, previewing summer music festival season and getting some practical advice. Let's get back to the practical side of things, Piet. If that ding wasn't us losing you, no, we still got you. Now, there's always the question, you know, do I dance? Do I stand? How much do I muscle into getting into a good spot? Can you share some crowd etiquette with us at a music festival?
Yeah, sure. I mean, generally what I generally do is I kind of follow the way of the crowd. That's how I go about it. I mean, if there's people, you know, if there's people sitting behind me and there's and people are sitting in front of me, I generally tend to sit. But, you know, I mean, if you want to dance, dance too. I mean, you've got to kind of do what you want to do. I think trying not to muscle ahead of people is definitely that's frowned upon. You probably shouldn't do that. I do remember one funny Summerfest story where this was years ago. I was there with my wife and her family, and we had our dinner. We were going to go see Pink. This is before she was playing the amphitheater. We got a picnic table. We were really excited. We had a great spot to see her. And then this person who seemed like they were partying a little too hard kind of just proceeded to stand on the picnic table and dance during the show, like right around our, like, you know, Miss Kitty's Diner chicken tenders. So we could see like her feet kind of stand, like stomping around our food. And I remember asking her very politely, "Do you mind getting down while we have our dinner?"
So I am getting down.
She kind of, she was getting down, but she did not want to get down off the table. She had some very choice words. Huh. And, you know, that was that, you know. So don't do that.
Keep please my feet out of other people's chicken.
Please keep your feet out of people's chicken. Please try not to drink too hard, you know, and be respectful of others. Please, please, please.
And then I wanted to ask about, you know, people with mobility needs who still want to get out and enjoy a show. Do festivals often offer accommodations?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they should, and a lot of them do. I know that there's, you know, there's ADA seating for sure at Summerfest, and generally they seem to be, they, like, for instance, in the amphitheater, they've increased the ADA seating capacities there, which is great. They've added elevators there, which I don't know if they were there before with the revamped amphitheater that opened in 2021. I mean, that's absolutely crucial and important. So I know at Summerfest for sure there is definitely improved ADA. I would be shocked if Harley did not have that, for instance, even though it's kind of like a one-time sort of festival situation. But that's definitely something that, you know, festival organizers generally are cognizant of. And you know, I think as with any festival goer, just give yourself plenty of time to get there to kind of sort out some things and make sure you can get what you need. But generally, yes, I've seen that and haven't heard a ton of complaints, at least when covering Summerfest, which is what the festival I cover the most.
Piet, we'll leave it there. Thanks, as always, for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Piet Levy is a music reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He joined us with a preview of Wisconsin's many summer music festivals and to share some advice on how to make the most of them. Hey, get more of his recommendations. He's got a big piece at jsonline.com. Previewing a bunch of festivals, a lot of big country festivals coming to the state, some hip-hop, some metal, all genres, and some that combine lots of different genres. That's at jsonline.com. Coming up, former President Trump appeared in a federal court today as a defendant in a case surrounding the possession of classified government documents and obstructing the investigation of those documents. We'll check out the case against Donald Trump. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time.